In this age of email and texting, just about everybody writes something, but the style that works in short bursts may not translate well to longer bits of prose, and many of us have to write reasonably well at work. The ability to communicate ideas and even persuade people can make a big difference in success in the workplace. Our guest this hour pitches her book of writing tips to people who write with some hesitation. Mary Kate Mackey is the author of Write Better Right Now, The Reluctant Writer's Guide to Confident Communication and Self-Assured Style. Mary Kate Mackey comes to this from a journalism background with articles published in many journals, including the Christian Science Monitor and Sunset Magazine. Mary Kate taught at the School of Journalism and Communication at the University of Oregon for 14 years. Thanks so much for joining us today, Mary Kate Mackey.
I'm very happy to be here.
So definitely a book born in Eugene. Tell us about the editorial board with caps that you write in your acknowledgments.
Well, the editorial board is my writing group. And what happened is I sort of third act wanted, I decided my kids were growing up and I better find something else to do. So I decided, well, I was an English major, maybe I can write. And so I went to Lane Community College and took a course from John Reed called Magazine Writing That Sells, I think, as opposed to magazine writing your stuff in your closet. Yeah. So, and I basically followed what he said to do. And I would have written on lots of different subjects, but the sort of garden writing horse came in first. And I sent all these queries. In those days, you sent them actually by snail mail. And they kept saying no or not, ignoring me completely at Sunset. And then finally, I think the guy thought, this editor, she's not going away. So, okay, here's a bone. Here, write this. Well, I was in a panic. I mean, I felt like the dog that caught the car, you know.
Uh-huh.
because I knew how to write the pitch, but I didn't know how to write the copy. So one of the things we did out of that first Magazine Writing That Sells course, I met another woman there who we said, well, let's form a group. Just the two of us will be a group, and we'll give each other feedback. So that was the forming of the editorial board. And we went back to the class, got some more people who had basically had the same background we did in that they'd taken this class from John Reed. And we started meeting. We ended up meeting for many, many years in Tsunami Books. Scott was lovely about having us there in the morning. And so we'd sit at a table and edit each other's stuff.
Wow, it sounds very supportive.
It was terrific. Basically, it happened because we wanted a magazine writing 2 class, mm-hmm. and they didn't have one. So John was the one who said, "Well, why don't you be a group all by yourself?"
Wow, sounds great, and it really worked for you too, because I understand you're particularly on gardening stuff. You've sold quite a few articles on gardening.
Yes, I mean my gardening career really took off, but out of that group also came Rosemary Osler. I think she's working on her 5th book right now. And she writes on language and certainly on American English. She's very fascinating. She has a book called Founding Grammars. And then another woman just published her book called Deanna Larson just published Menagerie Ranch, The Miracles and Mayhem of Animal Rescue, about a ranch just outside of Springfield that she has still. And in fact, her house was just designated as an historic, one of those really good, it was Jacob Clearwater's house, and Clearwater Park is named for him. So there's a lot of, the group has really rolled a lot of stuff out.
Well, so it sounds like the DNA of the editorial board is really present in your book then. I mean, a lot of the advice you gave each other sounds like this is probably what ended up in Write Better Right Now.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I mean, they say, mine your life. Well, the book is set up so that in each chapter, at the end of the chapter, is a narrative story. There's different modalities for how to learn stuff in there, because one of them is sort of a how-to, straightforward. Another is very experiential, where you're hands-on, you do the exercises. And the third one is really narrative. It's how to learn from a story. And so a lot of times mind my fellow editorial board stories to be able to put in the book. So the first one is a woman named Kelly O'Brien, and it's basically how she went ahead and wrote her stuff and how she learned to write, and go ahead and tell the story about it.
So I want to start with the part of the subtitle that refers to the reluctant writer's guide. I mean, are people still reluctant to write in an age when it seems like we're writing all the time, at least with our thumbs?
Well, yes. I think reluctant writers are in all fields, but they share a commonality. They have the same feelings about the writing process. And if they're faced with the act of writing, reluctant writers might feel incapable or inadequate or frustrated or unorganized or tired or stupid or wishful, as in, I wish I could write, but, mm-hmm. and then you fill in the blank. So that's, you know, it may also be reluctant writers could be people who, they're writing, they're in the middle of it, but they realize each time they're not reaching their writing goals. They're not getting any better.
Okay, so these are the people who need to get a few brush-up pointers and ideas for how to
right.
move their stuff
It's
along.
Really the toolbox, you mm-hmm. know, and just being able to take something very quickly and improve your writing with it.
All right, much more to talk about. The book is called Write Better, Write Now. Obviously, two different spellings of the word write in there. The Reluctant Writer's Guide to Confident Communication and Self-Assured Style. Mary Kate Mackey is from the Eugene area and is our guest and obviously the author of the book. We'll get more from her. And you can join the conversation with us and actually put some of your own tips in here as well, or things that might have worked for you or things you'd like to ask her about. We'll take your contact by phone and by email when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Eugene author Mary Kate Mackey, who has just recently won four different awards for her work in garden writing from the Association for Garden Communicators. So she's really done a lot of work writing about gardens, but has done a lot of other writing in general and offers her our own view on how we can improve our writing in her book, Write Better, Write Now, The Reluctant Writer's Guide to Confident Communication and Self-Assured Style. Join the conversation with us on the Exchange. Share writing tips and thoughts and things that have worked for you, or ask some questions of Mary Kate as we go along. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I'm always curious, Mary Kate, because I noticed one of the media silver awards from the Association for Garden Communicators was for blog writing. And I wonder if this book, for example, would have been different before the Internet.
Well, I think this book wouldn't have even happened before the Internet.
Huh.
I mean, there's plenty of really good writing books out there. But, I mean, you know, William Zinsser and Paula LaRocque, Jack Hart, Sandra Lamb, Stephen King. I mean, you know, they're there. But all those books are aimed at people basically who want to write. And the thing with this book is it's not. It's aimed at people who have to write. And they have to write because of their job, and they have to write because the Internet, before the Internet, most people, if they weren't in a job like lawyering or something else, they never wrote again. I mean, except maybe if they had to write thank you notes or whatever. That was it. You didn't do it, and now everybody does it.
This is a real to-the-point kind of book. It's very journalistic, and is that the kind of writing that is most needed these days, the real short, punchy, to-the-point stuff?
Well, you know, I would say probably the thing people write the most is emails.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's the seriously short, punchy. But I discovered something about emails when I was sort of deconstructing them. They actually take the form, the structure, of the inverted pyramid from newspaper writing.
So the important stuff first.
Everything has to go first,
mm-hmm.
and then it goes down to the bottom. I mean, it's a really interesting. It's just an interesting idea to me that something as old style as inverted pyramid was there so that you could clip from the bottom up if you got better advertising in the newspaper or whatever, you know,
mm-hmm.
way back. And here it is in such a modern usage.
Yeah, you don't bury the lead, as the expression in journalism goes, in emails. You want to make sure you get your most important stuff up top.
Exactly, because otherwise you're not going to get noticed at all.
Yeah, and I should point out that people might not be totally familiar with the style. The idea is you get, you know, that the, you know, the house burned and people died up top, and you get things like the cause and the other circumstances and how many firefighters down below.
Right, exactly. Well, if you think of it as a pyramid standing on its head, sort of the point stuck in the desert, you know, just everything that's written on the top of that upside down pyramid is the most important thing. And then it just goes down. You're projecting writing right onto the pyramid.
Mm-hmm. So you have in the book a comment from an attendee at a writing seminar who said she hated writing.
Yeah.
Why did she hate writing?
Well, she really had trouble because she was really... the whole aspect of it just got her totally anxious. And I think a lot of times, people are faced with a task and they haven't had the training. And not everybody can go to journalism school, but they haven't had the techniques or the tools just placed in front of them that says, okay, you can do this thing. You can make this better today.
So is it generally a sense of fear at just embarking upon the process for a lot of people?
It can be that. It was interesting. Last night I went on the Emerald Marketing Association. They had a downtown tour of four marketing agencies, and we got to go from one to the other, and it was really fun. But I met a woman who was, she's in marketing, and she said she had a boss who kept, saying to her, no, your writing's not punchy enough. It's not good enough. Do it better. And she was like, well, how do I do it better? Well, just do it. That was what he said. And, of course, she asked me, she said, what would you say? And I said, well, I got a whole chapter in the book on copying. And she said, what? What? You're copying? I said, yeah, you can always go back to somebody like that outrageous boss, because I think that's really a drag, you know. Just do it, you know, and say, well, what do you think's really good punchy copy? And then he'll supply something, even if it's his own work. But anyway, then you can take that and deconstruct it. How did he start? What kind of verbs did he use? Literally, how many words was it?
Yeah, this actually is a chapter that jumped right out at me. We're talking to Mary-Kate Mackey about her book, Write Better Right Now, which is organized in three major sections, think, structure, and edit. And this is in the think sections. Chapter two is called Copy, Copy, Copy. I want to be clear, though. You don't mean plagiarize.
No, absolutely not plagiarizing. But you're looking for an example of what is good in the field where you are. What's effective? What's out there? What do you admire? You know, and then you take that apart. And the chapter talks about just how to take it apart. You're going to look at how does it open? How does it lead? How long are the sentences?
And I actually get judgy with other people's writing. I mean, this is not a problem in this particular exercise.
No, no. But for instance, academic writing is going to be extremely different than the kind of writing that you have to do to tell an engineer what the heck's going on.
I giggle because I handed in a paper once that was written like I wrote for my broadcasting courses,
yes,
in college, and I got in trouble for it.
Exactly. Exactly. They really are different animals.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no judgment in the sense that, oh, academic is better than. It's the thing of wherever you are, you need to write in that form and use the kind of thing that's in that form. I mean, it may be that it ends up, you know, you're going to end up using cliches like, you know, at the end of the day or whatever, if that's the way they write where you are.
Wow, okay, so be ready to use elements that perhaps don't appeal to you, but if they work for the people that you're writing to,
exactly,
that's your audience, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So I love this section title, Bad Writing Can Be Your Guide.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Bad writing, deconstructing something that's really badly written is fascinating. And I actually had a really hard time coming up with something that could be an example of really terrible, terrible writing. And I was lucky enough, a friend of mine gave me something that had come in over the transom years ago at his publishing company in New York. And I took it and disguised it. I did not put in the way it was, because I thought, nobody is probably ever, ever going to read my book and say, oh, my God, my grandfather wrote this. But I figured, well, yeah, you better. So what I basically did was deconstruct how bad it was and then rewrite it, mm-hmm. so that I wasn't plagiarizing and I wasn't taking what wasn't mine, but it was terrible.
What are the things that make for bad writing, then? It's a good place to start, then, to talk about, you know, before we move on to good writing, what are the things that make bad writing bad?
I think the main thing is, you talk about burying the lead, mm-hmm. you know. The main thing is burying what you really want to say with a barrage of words. That's, I think, absolutely the main thing. The other thing is that you don't guide the reader where you want the reader to go. Again, too many words, mm-hmm. and words that are not extraneous. They don't help us get forward.
Mary Kate Mackey, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She taught for a bunch of years at the School of Journalism and Communication at the University of Oregon. She has written many articles, a lot about gardening, and recently won some awards for that writing. And she's the author of a book called Write Better, Write Now, The Reluctant Writer's Guide to Confident Communication and Self-Assured Style. Feel free to share some examples of good or bad writing you have run across in your life, or some questions about what we're talking about here. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So we kind of skipped ahead to the section on copying. Let's come back to the beginning of section one about thinking. So obviously we have to do a little work even before we start writing. What are the kinds of things you want us to think about before we sit down and get to work?
Well, it's interesting. There's it's basically, the question is, what am I writing about and why do I have to do it? I mean, those are real questions to actually ask yourself, you know? And years ago at the Poynter Institute in Florida, I saw a fellow named Chip Scanlon. He was part of a news train that my students went to. It was a whole conference in Portland. And he gave some of the best questions that I have ever seen for how to nail down what it is you want to say. Now, in an email or something very short, if you just ask yourself that, what is it? What's my point here? A lot of times, because that's what's going to have to go, you know, right up top, you can get to it. But for something longer, where you've got to do a report, you've got to do a history of whatever happened, or you got to, there may be ways to get to the point. And I'm going to read you the questions that Chip gave us.
Okay.
I've sort of changed them a little, but basically, You sit down, I love this, because you just do this mad writing, timed writing, where you don't think. You just write. You write for a minute, say, and you don't even think about it. You just try to answer the question, and you don't stop until the buzzer goes off. And you can do this for yourself. And so the first one is, what's this piece of writing about? And then, bing, 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 you just do it out. And then, why is it being told? Why do you have to say this? And so then you have about 30 seconds, bing, bing, bing. And then how, this is my favorite one, how does it connect to the greater world? Because this question really is about who needs to know this? Does my boss need to know this? Do other people need to know this? What's the importance of this in the bigger picture of whatever it is you're having to do? And then step four is very fast. What's the point? 15 seconds, what's the point? And then the last one is, in one word, what's this about? Just one word. And the words that come up at that point are usually really big. They're important words about sort of grabbing the interest. And they'll even be big, like trust or faith or you know, sort of everything that wisdom or, mm-hmm. you know, information you need. that's more than one word. But anyway, and from that, you now can answer the question, what's the point? Okay, that word is your connection to your reader.
And I noticed, too, that although it's condensed to one word in the final question, it's the same as the first question.
Exactly.
What's this about? Gets you to refocus.
Exactly. But let's get that down. Can we get that down to one word? And then you've got a word that you can work with to make what I call the cable car sentence or the theme statement sentence. People hate the word theme statement. You know.
Bad memories from school, right?
Yes! Yes, long before you really should be writing this, they demand you write this theme statement. Anyway, and it's made up of two parts, which is you've got a subject. You know, in my piece about this people's garden, say, you know, this wonderful garden. And then you got what you're saying. I am saying what? And that's your take on the information. I am saying that this gardener put in purple plants, which tie everything together. That's enough. That's enough. And then when I write, I can stick that thing not at the top, but underneath my writing on the computer. I'm writing along, and I stop, and I think. And when I'm thinking, I see that theme statement just sitting there.
Now I see why it's called a cable car statement. It's pulling you along to your destination.
Exactly. Exactly. And I like using visual terms because they're visual learners. And so you can see that. Okay, there's the cable car. It's just pulling me up the hill.
So we're going to wear out the letter P because we have planners, plungers, and mattresses in the P, I know. But then you also have people, problems, and promise. But specific to thinking about the people for whom you are writing.
Yes.
When is it appropriate to use second person?
It's often appropriate. Again, we're back to, does whatever you're writing for use second person? If it does, you can put it in. You can put it in wherever you want.
Very good.
the fact is that it first you look at that, but then you look at what is my writing going to solve for the person reading this? And if you take it off the onus off yourself, you know, oh, gosh, I got to turn this thing out. Oh, God, how am I going to do it? And you put it over on the person who's going to read it. What am I saying here that's going to solve a problem for them? Frankly, it makes it it's much easier.
Hmm.
And sometimes the problem isn't so much a problem as entertainment or, you know, I mean, there's lots of reasons to write. But if you look at the reader rather than at yourself, you're going to be guided much clearer as to what you need to tell them.
Which brings in WIIFM, which is not a radio station.
No, although I've heard people say, tune in to Radio WIFM.
Which stands for what?
What's in it for me? And that's the question every reader asks. I don't care if you're just scanning your emails or whatever. What's in it for me is the most important thing.
Okay, something very much to keep in mind. Let's take a call here from Helga in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Mary Kate Mackey, the author of Write Better Right Now.
I want you to delve into the relationship between speaking ability, like in everyday life, and writing, because I presume that not everyone who writes speaks rapidly and clearly and makes themselves understood or interesting.
All right, good point. Thanks for that, Talia. Appreciate it.
Well, it's funny. The first thing that comes to mind is a TED Talk.
Uh-huh.
Because so many people, you know, do TED Talks who are not good speakers. But TED Talks can be rehearsed forever. I mean, they take a huge amount of time to do the rehearsal, to take people forward, to get that thing all, you know, condensed down to what it's got to be. And the same is true with, you know, when you have to get up and speak. You plan it. You write it first, and then you figure it out, because the writing will clarify what it is you need to say at the same time. So you're not just going to wander off in the middle of, as some people are known to do. And that, actually connects in that way, which is, I guess the short version is rehearse.
Which raises the question, too, about I mean, I've written like I wrote for broadcasting pretty much my entire life. It comes very naturally to me. But obviously there are realms in which that doesn't work that well. I wonder, though, if a lot of writing now, particularly writing for the Internet, is more of a broadcast-y style where it's more conversational.
Absolutely. I mean, a blog is conversational. There's no question you are talking to those readers as a very much a personality yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all kinds of things to think about. We'll come back and talk more with Mary Kate Mackey about Write Better Right Now, The Reluctant Writer's Guide to Confident Communication and Self-Assured Style. We'll take your phone calls and emails as well. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 25. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're getting a crash course in writing today from Mary Kate Mackey, who spent 14 years at the School of Journalism and Communication at the University of Oregon, has done a lot of writing in her own right, a lot of garden writing, including writing for which she just recently won 4 awards for her garden writing. But we get out of the garden and into the specifics of writing in her book, Write Better Right Now, obviously two different forms of write, The Reluctant Writer's Guide to Confident Communication and Self-Assured Style. You can join the conversation on the Exchange as we talk about ways to approach our writing. And she divides the book into think, structure, and edit. We're getting up to structure now. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So as we get into the section on structure, you advocate a story arc. I mean, is it possible even in dry corporate writing?
Yes. It absolutely is. Anything that we're doing, even corporate writing, where you're just going to say this happened, that happened, that happened, that happened. The thing, it was interesting. A fellow writer, I was at an author's table the other day, and he was looking through the book, and he said, "Oh, it never occurred to me to actually picture the story arc."
Huh.
And I write it out, and in fact, I use that arc. If you have to organize your material, I see it as a sort of half a rainbow, upward arching from the left.
So we're talking about
right.
Almost a drawing, then.
Yeah. Yes, and you can use that drawing to attach information. And it's great because you can move it around. You can say, okay, what's the most important thing I need to say? All right, what's my point? Where am I driving to? Let's put that at the top. That's my conclusion. All right, and then what am I doing in between? And how is that thing going up? But by putting it on the arc, you have a natural sense of building so that even in writing something dry, you are basically saying, and what happens next? And what happens next? And what's the result of that? Okay, here it goes.
So there's almost a plot, I mean, to
yes.
even to something where you're writing about, the correct disposal methods for 2-inch videotape.
Exactly. Because you may want to start with, why do we need to dispose of this stuff? And then where are we going to go with it? And here's the how-to. And you're climbing right up to the point where, and here's the best thing you can do.
So there's even a hero's journey. So how do you approach this if you feel like there is no hero in your story?
Ah, okay. That's an interesting one because I do have a whole chapter on using the hero's journey. We're sort of borrowing it from fiction and then using it in a nonfiction setting. And, well, I can just tell you for garden writing, a lot of garden writing is very dull. It will be things like, here's a roundup of all the bulbs you can plant in springtime. Okay. But you can turn it around by showing the reader what problems these bulbs solve.
Ah, just as the hero is going to have to face the dragons
exactly.
and the fires and all that stuff.
Exactly. So we're back to the problem the reader may have that will be solved by that.
So you even recommend interviewing the hero.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of times I was thinking, I know people who are in corporations where they're called upon a lot of times it's because they say, oh, you're the English major. Go interview the CEO, you know, for how he founded this company. And you can set up your questions basically based on the hero's journey. You know, well, when this company got started, did you have any hesitation? Did you feel like maybe it wasn't the best thing to do? Did you have friends and people who helped you? Did you find there were obstacles that you had to overcome? All those questions, because we're hardwired, I think, to the hero's journey. I mean, you know, living or dead, everybody, Joseph, what's his name? You know, he came up with it.
Joseph Conrad?
Yeah. No. I'm blank. I'm totally blank. Gosh. Anyway, I'll get to it. And any reader, any listener can call in and tell me his last name. But anyway, he set this thing up, the hero with the thousand
Campbell,
faces.
Sorry.
Thank you, Campbell. Yeah. And
thank you, Google.
Oh, well, there you are. And yeah, C. You knew it was a C. Anyway, so that we're hardwired to it. I have a theory about that, which is basically people who didn't like stories sitting around the campfire, they left the campfire and they got trampled by the mastodon or whatever, and they're not in the gene pool anymore. So everybody loves stories. So being able to get something in that natural arc, the person you're interviewing also loves that and is aware of it, even if it's not on a conscious level.
You do provide, Mary-Kate, some off-the-shelf structures in here that people can use for whatever it is they're writing. How do we decide which is the best for what we're doing?
Ah, we're back to copying.
Ah.
What structure is working in a lot of what I have in the structure section is which form is the work you have to work in using? You know, what are the structures that have to be in there? And it's interesting to me because, for instance, I do have a lot of structures that anybody can borrow. I mean, things like, well, the inverted pyramid is in there, and the list, the numbers, you know, that's very popular now. You know, five ways to do this on whatever, the question and answer, all these different ones. But the one that's the most interesting to me is the structure for the essay, because essays really do... personal essays have a structure.
Mm-hmm.
And the structure happens where it starts in one place, and then there's some kind of inciting incident, and then it moves into a certain amount of chaos. And then at the top of the arc, there's a slight shift, and I'm talking slight here, just a slight shift that illuminates something. On some level, the reader suddenly goes, oh, yeah, I see.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. And the writer, you know, I mean, it's not as bold as now I realize that.
Yeah.
But it is that shift. And that is always the structure of a really good personal essay.
You bring in E.B. White is mentioned in here, and I'm really surprised to hear him say that that writing is hard, and yet he did it so well and instructed many other people to do it so well. But you also come to Michel de Montaigne. Why is he mentioned in here?
Well, he is the man who invented the essay.
Ah.
He did it. I mean, and he did it in this amazing – he did it during the Renaissance, and he actually came up with a completely new form of how to write. And it was the personal essay. Everybody wrote in Latin at the time. No, he wanted to write in common French. Even though as a child, Latin, because his father was dictated this, he had to learn Latin as his mother tongue.
Really?
Yeah. And so he really got into this. But I was turned on to him by E.B. White. And he wrote a wonderful, long essay that nobody in my classes want to read anymore because it's too long, called The Essayist. And he talks about the fact that when he gets, you know, down about writing essays, he thinks about Michel de Montaigne's dusty cloak hanging in the back of the closet, smelling faintly of camphor. And it's such a wonderful image. And then I said, well, who's that? I want to know about that.
Mm-hmm. So you found out about Michel de Montaigne.
Right. And it turns out that the kind of change in thinking that was shown in Renaissance paintings, you know, where everything went from no perspective and giant floating baby Jesuses and, you know, all that to, you know, the Last Supper and, you know, total realism and the Sistine Chapel and all that. And that happened like in 100 years. And basically, Michel did the same thing in writing.
And it certainly gave us short forms, which when you think about it, I mean, essays led to things like magazines and shorter writing.
Yes. Absolutely, because mm-hmm. it was stuff that people could take in really quickly.
And not have to sit and read an entire book.
Exactly.
So section 3 in the book, in your book, is about editing. And I want to ask what you say to people who think they write just great the first time through.
You don't. It's really, anything it can be polished. You know, and so no matter how, even just the simplest email, you know, before you hit that send button, just go back and look, because maybe there's a better verb, or maybe you can say that shorter, and just take that moment to go back and see what it is.
And I can recommend as a broadcaster, read it out loud, too, because your ears will sometimes pick up things that your eyes didn't.
Absolutely. And your breath.
Mm-hmm.
Is the sentence too long? And in the middle of it, you're going, yes, that sentence is too long.
I do know people who prefer sort of the opposite. You know, they want to power through all their mistakes and they go through a, you know, mistake and misspelling filled first draft. Is there a recommended medium point you think is good, or is it something every writer has to discover for themselves about how sloppy to make the first draft and how much?
I think just getting it out is really important, because if it's in your head, it isn't in the physical world yet. So being able to get something down on the paper. Now, there are people who must edit at the same time they write.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is two different parts of your brain. It really is two different steps. So if they have to do it, then, gosh, I say, go for it. You know, if you're going to write one sentence and then edit it, fine, and then move on. But for most people, it's better to just let it flow, to just let it come as bad as it is. It doesn't matter how bad it is. It never matters how bad a first draft is. It's always about how good the edit is.
Okay. So, see, I've had teachers recommend, you know, just get words down that'll remind you of the concepts you had in mind. If you
exactly.
get that stuff out there, it's a good thing. Jamie in Medford called in a while ago. Wanted to hear you comment on the importance of punctuation in the final edit.
Yes, punctuation. I think of it as the traffic signals in your conversation with your reader.
Mm-hmm.
And it's commas are going to tell you to slow, and periods are going to tell you to stop. But again, punctuation is different depending on what you're writing for. I mean, for instance, the famous journalism quote about you have one exclamation point in your lifetime, use it wisely. That doesn't happen. Whole lifetimes disappear on Facebook or social media, and that's appropriate for there. There's no reason to lay something like that on to that form. So in that sense, all those exclamation points are doing something. They're communicating. And so, you know, let them be. But it depends on what you have to write for. And if what you have to write for needs very clear communication, you're going to need to be interested in punctuation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Obviously, we're just doing a Reader's Digest version of your book, which, again, is at 200 pages, is quite brisk and punchy. I want to ask about endings, though, because it seems like this part of writing bedevils people, even the ones writing stories for news organizations. I mean, how do you recommend pulling your thoughts together for a close?
Well, again, I think you go back to what was the point?
Mm-hmm.
And how have we changed? What does the reader know now that they didn't know then? Because at the end of this, especially if you're writing a summary conclusion type thing, rather than just, you know, like stop, For instance, Sunset Magazine always just stopped. It never had any conclusions on anything. I write for Better Homes and Gardens. It always has a conclusion. It always has something that has moved us from one place to another.
Hmm.
So that's what you do. It's this odd thing. I do want to just say this because it was the best advice I ever heard from Jack Hart, and he was the editor at The Oregonian and Pulitzer Prize winner and just fabulous, and he's written great books on writing. A writer's coach is wonderful. But he had the best advice, which is if you're struggling with one aspect of the writing process, don't go forward, go backward, because your problem lies in the step behind it. And if you're having trouble with your ending, you may have to back all the way up to your beginning to figure out, okay, how did we change here? What happened? What did I give the reader now? What do they have? And so always go backward when you're struggling instead of forward.
I do see some echoes of that in your book because you make the same recommendation. You know, if you're happy, if you're stuck on a step, go back and figure out what you just did.
Absolutely. Well, I have him in there because that's one of the best things I ever learned.
It's some great advice and written as clearly as the writing you think people can end up with themselves. The book is called Write Better Right Now, The Reluctant Writer's Guide to Confident Communication and Self-Assured Style. Mary Kate Mackey lives in Eugene and wrote it and joined us today in the exchange. Mary Kate, thanks so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, take care.